Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
One more thing. Let me tell you about a new sponsor, Raygun. If you're wanting to detect and diagnose errors and crashes in your software, even find problems that you didn't know existed to improve your software, then Raygun might be perfect for you. You add a few lines of code to your application, and in minutes you'll get real-time error reports with all the information that you need to fix bugs fast. You can even hook it up to your team chat, bug tracking, development workflow tools. Raygun covers all major web and mobile programming languages, including .NET, the full Xamarin stack, JavaScript, and many more. Go check out Raygun today at raygun.io. I use this myself on my little startup, and I really, really recommend this product. It is a great, great product. Check it out, Raygun at raygun.io.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 480. In this episode, Scott talks with Andrea Gaita about the current state of virtual reality.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm chatting with Andrea Gaita. She used to work for Unity. We've all heard of Unity, and now she works for GitHub, which we have also all heard of. You've worked at lots of places that we've heard of.
Yes, this is true. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
I am very good. I am so very pleased to be here.
No, it's my pleasure, and it's always fun to talk to you. The last time I saw you, we were talking about augmented reality and virtual reality together at Build.
Yes, exactly. When looking at the HoloDeck announcements and all of that completely crazy stuff.
Yeah, the HoloLens. I would like it to be a HoloDeck, though. It feels like it should be a HoloDeck.
It should be.
That's what we're doing. I mean, don't you think as an industry that is the goal?
Yes, totally. I mean, it's we're getting there. The augmented and the virtual experiences are aligning, and it's totally a holodeck. I think like both of them are going to get together, and it's going to completely blow our minds even more than it's already doing.
Do you think that augmented reality and virtual reality is going to be, and this is a cliche, the next iPad?
Yes, for the next generation. I mean, we are in the transition. The generation that's coming now the iPad is their thing, right? Mm-hmm. The next generation is going to have the augmented reality and virtual reality as a normal thing, right? They're going to be the content builders as we are the content builders for the current generation that's using things, mm-hmm. right? They're going to be the content builders for the next generation. So it's going to progress from there in a world changing view of things.
It makes me wonder if the Second Life people, who I still look on as being a little bit weird, were ahead of their time.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, even at the same time that they were launching, I remember there was a company called doing a thing called Blacksoon, which mm-hmm. was two X's, which was also like virtual reality world with shopping malls and everything that was directly like the title Blacksoon is the building in Snow Crash mm-hmm. where all the hackers get together, right? And this was really early. Like Second Life, it was just starting. This was 98, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody's already, it's all of the technologies that you see have multiple generations and iterations. There's always someone coming up really early, but mm-hmm. there wouldn't be the technology if they didn't start there, right?
Yeah. Blacksoon, Blaxxun. They were in 1995. And unfortunately, so early on, they were gone by 2002.
Yeah, I remember having a disc and playing with it, like, because the company I was working for at the time was trying to figure out how to do these experiences, like, you know, virtual reality, shopping malls, or looking at interiors of buildings and architecture, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that was just mind-blowing at the time.
So we've only gone 3 minutes into the podcast, and it didn't take you that long to mention Snow Crash. And I don't know if everyone who has who's listening is familiar with Snow Crash, but maybe you could talk a little bit about that book and what it means to you, and what it means. Why does it keep coming up so early on in discussions around augmented and virtual reality?
So I think it's because it is so real and accurate to the experience of how you build something completely new. Not only because it was describing a virtual reality, but describing the lives of people inside the virtual reality, which why people used it, right? People logged in just to meet with friends or to show off or to do business. And it was just a normal experience. So the book already shows the virtual reality in a generation that's using it not as a gimmick, but already as something that is a part of life, basically. And that is where you throw a light into a completely different universe that doesn't exist. And this is at a time where, like, computers, internet, so barely young or not even there, right? And just to put that light in a world where you can just shift. It's not even in construction. It's already there. It's gone through all of the iterations that we're still going through. And at that time, it was completely crazy. And it's a vision, right? But it's those visions are the ones that actually give you a goal. So you need something to strive for. Even if you don't get there, at least there's goalposts. It was like, I want that.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody's going, like, everybody... It's Snow Crash, because that's what, like, I want that.
Yeah. You know, we talked a little bit at the beginning about the holodeck, but the holodeck was a curiosity. It was where the captain went to chill. But the holodeck, only in later did it become an actual, like, sentient thing, and they would fight with it, and there were AIs in the holodeck. But it was never part of the economy. It was never part of the living, breathing, you know, aspect of their everyday life. It was just a place they went to hang out.
Yeah, which is why, most developers that think VR think Snow Crash,
right,
more than thinking holodeck, because it wasn't a part. It became a part. It went, like, the engineering started using it for, you know, you can see, like, the CSI things of, today, where with the holograms that they map and move things around virtually.
Right.
That was what they did in the holodeck, engineering of a couple of episodes like that. But it was, between the holodeck is amazingly cool, but it's more a gimmick. It's less, it's kind of like, at the point in history where it's still new, it's still a thing. It's mm-hmm. still, what are we going to do with this? While Snow Crash is just, it's there. It's a part of life. It's internet, right, but in 3D.
Yeah. And the thing that was, not only was it integrated with the universe, but that Stevenson, the author, and again, this is 1992, I think, when Snow Crash was written, when they would enter this metaverse, they had different levels of interaction based on how much money they had. So people who were entering the metaverse from a low quality public terminal would see a black and white metaverse that was 3D, but it was grainy and poor. But rich people would, you know, jack in with goggles, and they'd be on it 24/7. They would choose to live in it, like that, what was the movie, with, Bruce Willis,
Surrogates. The Surrogates. Yes.
Right.
So another book. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Locked In. The recent, yep. Yeah, with the idea that, well, if you can't move, if you are physically disabled to the point where you're not able to move at all, you could potentially jack in and have a very, very successful life through a surrogate, a robot.
Yeah.
But totally. The thing that was so interesting is that he was thinking about goggles and, you know, Google Glass before anyone was thinking about those things. This is 23 years ago.
Yes, it's amazing. If you read the description of the scenes where he's checked in, like he's describing something that we now know as the Oculus. It's goggles connected with a cord. And funny enough, he has exactly the same problems in the book that Oculus has in real life, which is if you push the core too much, the goggles might come off your face, and movement is annoying because you want to move, right? But at the same time, you're stuck with that wire. So, and that's one of the scenes, having to lug the wires around, but you need the wires because you need the bandwidth for things not to be in, you know, black and white.
Right. Right. But you need also, the bandwidth. You don't want jitter. You need high res. I mean,
yeah,
it needs to be jacked in HDMI high quality.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the guy was really, he thought about it. He thought about how what does the hardware look like? I mean, not the wireless back then was not an option, but even if it was, you still need the wire because you need the bandwidth. And like, what does it look like and why would it operate? I mean, he really thought about it. And I was looking at, Michael Abrash. He wrote a blog post, when he joined Oculus saying that, detailing how he got there. And it was Snow Crash and Ready Player One, which is another book, that gives you the same vision, but now we know how the hardware looks like. So let's push it a bit more in terms of, you know, getting full checked in the whole bodysuit and like everything and how kids would grow up in an environment like this. But Snow Crash, Diamond Age, both of these already did that in terms of, that's why I think people really, they don't want to die. They don't want to get too old before they see this actually happening. And they really, really want this to happen because it was so much fun reading the books.
Well, that's making me realize, though, that you said that, you know, today's, like my children, they're the iPad generation, right? Am I going to be just an old guy that's like jacked into the net? You know, are we going to go to where the old people are and they're all just going to be jacked in running around like young people?
I bet episode of The Simpsons or no, Futurama.
Futurama?
Where the old people are in the heaven of a virtual reality all put away. So.
Well, let's talk about the details of the Oculus and things like it. When you put this on, and I've used the DevKit 1, is that the term?
Yeah, the DK1, okay. Yeah.
And it was about 480p, it was interlaced, it had a screen door effect. I was distinctly aware that this was on my head, but if I mentally forgot about, if I forced myself to forget about the resolution, the thing that is so striking about the Oculus isn't whether it's high res or not, I think. It's the naturalness of the movement of the head. There's a smoothness to it and a lack of jitter and immediacy to it that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah, it's, so the DK1, totally remember the first time I put it on. It took me, because I put it on without glasses and I wear glasses, but I don't like having stuff, you know, like the 3D goggles in the movies or the Oculus stuffed in, on top of my glasses. And I don't see that badly, so I can deal with it. When I put it on the first time, I didn't see the screen door effect immediately because of that. What really like hit me was the space. The feeling that you are no longer in the same space. That there's other space, right? And if you stretch your hands, you're not going to hit walls, even though you're standing right next to a wall. But your brain immediately says, yes, I have teleported into something else. I totally accept this as true. And you know it's not, right? But the brain immediately goes, oh, yeah, totally.
I'm Let's in go Spain. With this. I'm walking yes. around in Italy. You know, that's exactly, yes. You did the Italian demo, right? That was the walking around in the Italian villa.
I did. The first one actually was the a demo where you're sitting down and being judged. And you don't actually move around. You're always sitting down. The only thing you can do is look around the room. Oh, and the room is very dark. And there's like three judges on a panel in front of you saying things that you don't really like, whoa, 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 like, Charlie Brown. And then you're looking around, it's dark, and you can see like eyes peeking behind curtains. And it's kind of really weird. And then suddenly they judge you. A trapdoor opens under your seat and you fall. And you're falling through a tube. And then suddenly you're free falling, I don't know how many kilometers to above the ground. And you see the ground and you are falling and you don't even need the wind to realize that you are falling. The entire thing, just your brain just goes, yep, I'm falling. And it's.
You grab your seat?
Yeah. I mean, you go like, yes, everybody grabs. Everybody goes completely static and whoa, what the hell? They look up, they look down. It's like, oh my God, I'm falling. And it's completely believable. And even better because you're actually sitting down and not moving. People that are prone to having, to being sick because of the motion signals, because of the Oculus, like if the demo is not quite calibrated for the speed that your brain thinks you should be moving your head, you'll get sick.
It was a really interesting experience. I had the DK1. I bought it. I hooked it up to my machine and there's a switch in Half-Life because I wanted to try something significant. And Half-Life put in a VR switch. And I honestly got nauseous. I'm actually getting a little nauseous thinking about it because it's amazing. But at the same time, your brain really knows if it's off by a millisecond or 10 milliseconds. Like, if a jitter is wrong, you get violently ill quickly.
Yes.
That seems like that's the number one issue that they're going to have to solve, not the resolution.
It's bad. And actually, it wasn't as bad. Like with the DK1, when I tried it, Rollercoaster demos, which are amazing. I tried a bunch of demos. I never got motion sickness. The DK2, the first one that I tried, that was.
So what's the difference between the two?
So a better resolution, the refresh rate is higher. In general, it's still the screen door effect, but much more reduced. It's still there. Mm-hmm. But most of all, so it has more power. It can show you more pixels. And there was probably more demos at the time. It's faster in terms of reaction. Latency is lower, all of this stuff, which means that any weird stuff between the speed at which you move, either your body or your head. Mm-hmm. Or if you're controlling with a keyboard, then you go forward, the speed at which you expect to move and the speed at which you actually move is different. Your brain will just go, no, this is no immediately. it was just looking around a little airplane and it was like, oh, okay. But that is something that is. I mean, it has to do with the content. It has to do with the people that make it, because that's going to happen. It's expectations of the brain in terms of your body, because now it's not only just looking at the screen and, you know, you can move or run, but you're not in it and you can actually probably, either, you know, it's a game. Your brain can totally separate yourself because you can move your head independently of what you're seeing on the screen. When you have one of these things on, there's no separation at all. Your brain will totally buy it because it does. And then anything that doesn't really, really jive with what your brain is expecting really kills you. I also tried the Crescent Bay prototype. And that one is amazing.
What is the name of that again?
The Crescent Bay.
Crescent Bay. Okay.
Yeah, it's
and this is a competitor?
No, it's the next gen Oculus. So the one before the commercial version, right? So there's the TK1 and then there's the TK2 and then they did the next one. I think it's Crescent Bay.
So it's something that I can't go and buy right now though.
No, it's a prototype that is only available for demos. I tried it at Unity.
Okay.
Because they were demoing it out. And that thing is like, it's really something else. Screen door effects almost gone.
Okay. So it really is getting better.
Yes. And they track you with a camera. It's actually the one that they were demoing at Build. I think there were a bunch of Oculus there. So they have a bunch of dots on the helmet now. On the little, you know, the screen.
That's a clever way to do it.
Yeah. So they track you with an infrared camera. which tracks the dots.
Like so, a connect.
Yeah, exactly. Which
so
basically
it's giving
means,
more context, isn't it?
Yes, you can peek around corners.
I want to take a brief moment to thank my sponsor, SyncFusion, this week. The first and only complete Hadoop distribution designed for Windows is now available from SyncFusion. You can literally deploy a production-ready big data cluster in minutes. This revolutionary big data platform will not only change the way that you approach big data, but it is 100% free for everyone, with free commercial support for SyncFusion Plus members. Learn more at syncfusion.com/bigdata. So I understand that with the gyros inside of an Oculus, I can turn my head left and right. But if I strafe, if I move my head laterally,
yeah,
how does it know that? Well, if a webcam is in front of you, it can know that. So that would make everything more stable, I would think.
Exactly. So, and gives you way more degrees of freedom. So for the DK2, you can already detect upward motion, left, right, up, down, because the sensors can let you track that. But you can't track if you're leaning forward. You can track this as long as you have an actual camera that can check. And the DK2 has, it comes with a small camera that gets connected to the Oculus. So you can actually detect if you're leaning forward. What they did was give you even more degrees of freedom. So you can look under things and you can look around things and it tracks the whole movement of the head. So you can track neck movements because of that, even if you're not moving at all. And that, and then they have obviously a demo with the dinosaur that he goes over, you know, goes over and you can just look under it and it, you can hide in grass.
I think that I like that comment about peeking around something because that is the thing. Like it sounds silly. Like there's so many goals, there's so many endpoints, but just simply being able to peek around. I've heard that there maybe a year from now we're going to see all webcams will have an infrared component, both for facial recognition for Windows Hello, but like I just bought a new webcam. So the webcam that you and I are chatting with right now is a Logitech 930. And
yes.
I had thought webcams were a solved problem. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. And I haven't even thought about webcams in 2 or 3 years. I had a Logitech 910. It's a perfectly good webcam. But I just got this 930. It's got onboard H.264 encoding. So it's not, my machine doesn't have to do any of the work. The next one, the ones that will work with this Windows Hello, I understand will need IR so that they can track your face. So it's almost like we're starting to get where a tiny little Kinect is going to be available as an off-the-shelf consumer webcam.
Yeah.
And that will make augmented reality that much easier.
Yes. I'm sitting right now. I'm looking at a 930 because I already have one. They're amazing.
It's the best freaking camera.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's ridiculously wide view and everything always looks good. It's awesome. And right next to it is the IR camera from the Oculus. It's just sitting right next to it. See? So I already have
Great minds think alike. Do want to point out that there's a difference though between moving physically in virtual reality and seated. People are saying that the movement thing might take a while to figure out, but sitting in a scenario like this one with Elite Dangerous, the space adventure game.
Yes.
People are saying that that's the killer thing. Like, okay, maybe I can't stand up, but at least I can look around a cockpit of a spaceship.
Yes. Elite is amazing. I have Elite with a DK2 and a joystick with a throttle stick.
Oh.
Like a huge metal.
Let me see it. Like, this is like a proper. Like it's, it came out of a F-16 type. Oh wow, that is legit. Okay, so she's got a complete full on metal. It looks like it's quite heavy.
Yes, and this is only half of it because the throttle, it's the other half.
Yeah.
It's like double throttle with switches.
And do you see your hands in the game?
You see your hands, but they're not real. They're not getting tracked. Even though the DK2 can track them, but they support the good one as well, and they don't track that. What they do is really, really clever. So, there was another game, I can't remember the name, that came before this that also had support for the Oculus. And an amazing thing when you're in a cockpit is being able to look around you 360 degrees and actually, you know, when you're playing Wing Commander when I was a kid or whatever people are playing now with simulators, you really, really want to, like, the guy's just flown off your screen and you want to look at him, right? Mm-hmm. And you can actually do this. You can move your head and just go, whoa, that guy just flew off. Let me turn around. And with Elite, not only can you do that, but all of the UI, all of the HUD of the cockpit is accessible when you look at it. So if
meaning
you want to
access-
Meaning
you can push a button?
No, you just look at it. Yeah, well, yes. And then you can control it with the keyboard or with the joystick if you have enough sticks, which I do because it has a ton of sticks. But basically, you have your hands on the joystick and you look on your left side for the communications HUD and you will activate because you're looking at it with the Oculus, right?
So and then you can just- like Tony Stark style?
Yes, exactly. All of the HUD is like that. So
for
you are
people
sitting-
who are not seeing you, I just want to point out that Andrea is absolutely beaming right now. And I think that's what makes people like about augmented reality, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's it gets tiring after a while. You can't
play
with it.
You mean mentally or?
Physically and mentally. It's kind of like after a while, you get tired. But we're talking about technology, an Oculus that's still in a prototype phase, developer edition, not even a consumer version, and already spending hours playing, like landing and flying. There's a lot of experiences that are still hard to make. People are still trying to figure out how to make experiences and content for this, but other experiences you already know. That they were just waiting for this, right? Wing Commander Elite, stuff like this. Like, you totally know this is the thing.
What do you think this is going to do to people's brains, though? Like, I know that I kind of am saddened when I'm watching kids walk by at a mall and their brains are plugged into a Nintendo 3DS. And I'm thinking, what is this doing to this little person's brain that they're on this thing 4 or 5 hours a day? I don't let my kids do that.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's a 9-year-old going to do jacked into an Oculus? And, you know what I mean? That's going to change their brain.
Yes, but depends on the content. Depends on the experiences, right? It's going to change their brain, and I have no idea what the effect is going to be. But there's this game, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes? That's the name of the game?
Yes. Which is an amazing game for Oculus, where you have to defuse a bomb. In pairs. So one of you is sitting with the Oculus looking at the bomb and the other one is sitting with the manual. And you have to describe what the bomb looks like.
Oh, they can't see it.
No, they can only see.
So you're explaining and they're going through the manual and telling you what to do.
Yes, basically.
Now that's interesting because this isn't just a put a helmet on your head and disappear kind of a game. There's a social aspect to it. It's a clever mechanic.
Yeah. It's new content, different content made just for the Oculus. You couldn't do this. This is completely new. It's an experience that you could never do with any other medium, right?
Because you're acting as if you're separate. You're away somewhere and they're explaining over the phone to you.
Exactly.
You're how to cut the red wire.
Yes, cut the red wire and diffuse. Like there's two people pairing up and it's that they've done a bunch of tests with the couples, which is funny because,
oh, no.
You know, yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm thinking about like my wife and I, we're going to die. There's no way we're going to get this thing taken apart.
Exactly. It's pretty much like that, but it's amazing. This is the thing, like, it's gonna ruin brains, yes, like, phones ruin brains and iPads, everything changes your brain. I can't even imagine. I mean, people are gonna be different, right? Mm-hmm. For growing up with this stuff. But then again, imagine the content that can be done, instead of, I mean, like the experiences that you can experience because you can't go somewhere, but you can see it and you can experience and you can touch it and you can examine it, right? So in that sense, the content that can be done is amazing. And I mean, it's like there was another game, not directly with the Oculus, but with smart sensors where you would have a book. And you were playing a game and you're like a Harry Potter kind of magic thing. And every time you have to cast a spell or do anything, you have to open the right page of the book. It's a physical book and touch the right combination of signs to launch the spell to do your thing. right? And the book is wired up with a bunch of sensors and electric paint and everything. So to detect touches and to detect all of this stuff and send it directly to the game. So now you are playing a game and interacting with physical objects. Now imagine that, that type of interaction with the Oculus. Right. So there's all kinds of content that we can't imagine, which is why I say that the people that are growing up with this stuff, the next generation that's going to, the people that are seeing this in a consumer way, they're going to start seeing the world differently. Yes. Mm-hmm. But they're going to start producing content that we can never think about because we are bound by our current experiences.
Yeah.
Which is why,
One of the games that's been blowing my mind lately is Life is Strange. Have you played that?
Life is Strange. No, not yet.
It's kind of like Walking Dead or Game of Thrones. It's one of those kind of, it feels a little bit like a Telltale Games game. Mm-hmm. But basically it's a simulation of being in high school and you are a teenage girl. And there's all this angst and everything. And then, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes into the game, very short amount, I'm not giving any spoilers away, she discovers that she can turn back time, which I think is what every teenage girl or teenage boy would want to do, which is like, oh, I just said something dumb in class. Let's back up and let's do that over again.
Yep.
And then it becomes a big conspiracy and she discovers a huge conspiracy theory and then spends multiple, you know, it's an episodic game.
Oh, wow. I need to
and
play this.
And she has to uncover this. And you should try this. I'd love to talk to you about it sometime. It feels like, you know, The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones types of games. It's kind of 3D. It also happens to be in Oregon, which is cool because I'm in Oregon. But if you could play as a, you know, teenage girl or someone that, I am not a teenage girl, someone that you are not, you know what I mean? If you could play Mass Effect as an alien. You know what I mean? And be not just first person, but be that alien. Look in the mirror and see that you're a lizard. That now we're talking.
Yes. That was one of the first demos actually that came out. Not a demo, but there was one of the hack weeks at Unity where all the developers get together for a week and just hack on stuff. The first week that we had an Oculus at the office, the first hack week, someone went and did
a mirror.
Yes, but look in the mirror as not you, as your opposite gender.
Oh, wow. Just from a gender perspective. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, like,
no, but
look at yourself. It's
empathy. That creates empathy.
Yeah. There was also an experiment where two people lying down would put the Oculus, on and then, they would look through the other person's, kind of perspective.
Oh, so you swap your eyes.
Yes. Basically something like that.
I look out of my eyes, see the Oculus, which is a view out of your eyes looking back at me. And when we look at each other.
Yes. Something like that to really give you that sense of out of body because the brain believes it's amazing for all of the stuff that, you know, your wired patterns and all of this that you're wired to identify. It's amazing how in half a second you put on that thing. If the environment is well done, it's not even have to be well done because the DK1 didn't have that much going for it, but it still gave you that. As soon as you step into it, you can't even do anything. It's just looking around and it's kind of like, in there.
So let me, as we wrap up here, let me put you on the spot. It is June of 2015. When am I going to be able to walk into a store and buy an amazing off the shelf virtual reality thing and have an amazing experience? Put a date on it and we'll come back and when it happens and we'll see if you were right.
You can buy it. I will bet you in June 2016.
Seriously, 1 year from now.
Yeah.
I'll be able to have a great experience for
the great
some
experience.
Of money.
The great experience. That's the problem. You can actually have great experiences right now. Small, like the keeps talking, nobody explodes, like Elite, like all of these. You can already have them, which means that when the consumer version, ships, which, June 2016.
That's your gut. That's your feeling when it'll be ready.
I'm a pessimist, so I would say September because that's traditionally when they end up actually doing
it. Christmas next year.
They're saying first quarter.
Next
I'm
year,
saying first quarter 2016, I'm saying it's going to be push it by the end. Okay. They've been good at delivering on their word of how, when to deliver, but it's going to be complicated. Mm. Also, it still annoys me that it's not wireless. For all of the, yes, we need wire for bandwidth. I want a movable experience. I want to stand up and move.
Yeah. It's so hard, the latency to push that kind of, you know, it's every millisecond counts, you know?
Yes. I mean, everything like the GPUs and graphics and everything counts, but I want to move.
Well, you know, there's a thing called, have you seen the Omni Virtuix?
I have not. I've played around with the Samsung Gear.
Yeah.
Which tries to, I mean, it basically uses a phone with an Oculus.
Yeah. That would be an interesting way to walk around. I think we could see a version of the iPhone, maybe the iPhone 9. Or the iPhone 8.
The screens are already there.
With Google Cardboard, right? Google Cardboard is literally just a piece of cardboard that you hold up to your eyes and you put the phone in it and boom, you've got a poor man's VR.
Yeah. And amazingly, it works.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It does work. And also the Virtuix Omni is like, you know, those discs, it's a concave disc that you would like, you know, the kind of thing that you, when you were a kid, you'd be on a sled, you get a nice big giant concave disc and you'd go sledding down in this disc. Imagine that with supports that lets you run in place.
Yes. I think I saw this at GDC.
Right. You run in place and then you're supported by the thing, you know, kind of a harness. It is the height of geekiness. You think a Segway makes you look like a dork.
hackers.
But it's amazing because like, I want to run in place on this disc with these special shoes. And then you get the gun and now you're living in Call of Duty.
Yes. That's the demo that they do at TDC. I've seen it. It's going to get there.
You know what it reminds me of? It's like today, if you're an enthusiast, you can spend a couple of grand and get an amazing car simulator. Like you can have the seat and the shifter. You know, people who are always building a space shuttle in their garage or a complete flight simulator. That's going to become much more common for people. It's going to be more accessible.
Well,
less money.
2 years ago, I was at the conference in Lisbon called CodeBits, and a friend of mine built an experience with another friend. So they got together. This guy builds arcades for a living, custom arcades. He built two Tron bikes.
Oh, my goodness.
And with the Oculus.
Tron and Oculus? That's
yes.
That's everything.
So you're on the bike and the bike, you know, it's you move it side by side, one side and the other, and it will shift directions just like, you know, and you're playing the game with the Oculus on a Tron bike.
That will not make me nauseous at all.
No, it's actually really, really good.
That's amazing. Well, thanks so much for sharing kind of the state of virtual reality with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.